Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to WGXC 90.7 FM. ICRA.
All summer there are tours at the Hudson Athens Lighthouse every second Saturday of the month through October. You can visit the 1874 lighthouse that's in the middle of the Hudson River. The tours leaving from the Henry Hudson Riverfront Park in Hudson at 11 a.m., noon, 1 p.m., and 2 p.m., and from the Athens Village Riverfront Park at 11:30 a.m., 12:30 p.m., 1:30 p.m., and 2:30 p.m. That's the Hudson Athens Lighthouse Tours all summer on the second Saturday. And you can find out more on the WGXC Community Calendar online at wgxc.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Igers Kildas and Louisa Sabin Kildas of Hudson, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
Say, Dad, I have an upset stomach.
I've got just the thing. Dr. Whitaker's Larded Atoms. Dr. Whitaker's Larded Atoms combine the smooth, pleasing flavor of lard with the soothing qualities brought to us through science.
It smells funny.
That's our special ingredient, uranium, the scent of the powerful atom. It's strong, but that's how you know it's working. Feeling better yet, sweetheart?
Sure am. Thanks, Dad.
Don't thank me. Thank science.
Dr. Whitaker's Larded Atoms in 5 or 10 ounce bottles at your local grocer.
If you think you're smart, then use your cranium. Start each morning with uranium.
You're tuned to Radio Art, creative transmissions, sound experiments, noise, and more on WGXC 90.7 FM ACRA.
How should we do this, Sophie? I think.
Yeah, we're on. Do you want me to start singing, perhaps?
Yes.
Interrupt me whenever you want. You want to know anything about what I'm singing?
You sent me the text right before we started, but I will warn you in advance that I won't be able to, I would have to sort of visually or just by reference to the text, tell you what part of it, because I can't sing and I won't be able to replicate any of the notes.
That's fine. I don't expect you to. Sure. Do you want to know the context at all, or shall I just go for it?
Let's just go for it.
Okay. Noticing you! Noticing you, honey, senor, ah,
Sophie, who is singing?
This is a page, a Catholic page. So we are in the midst of the War of the Huguenots, or just before it, rather. The opera is going to culminate in the St. Bartholomew Day Massacre of the Protestants by the French Catholics. And I am Urbain, the page of Marguerite de Valois, the kind of Catholic heiress, who is looking for her Protestant suitor, Raoul, and is going to lead him to her, to his queen. And this is all in the, we're still in the diplomatic process prior to the massacre. We're all still trying to see if marriages can be arranged so that everybody starts to get along politically. It won't work, unfortunately, but. So basically it's a noble seigneur, salut. My dear lords, hello. It's a show-off aria, essentially. All of that it amounts to really is, hello, I'm here. I'm looking for one of you. He's lucky that my lady is interested in him.
Now, this page is a boy or a
it's
girl?
It's a boy. It's a boy.
How young of a boy?
He would be something like 16, 17. He's young man. He is not going yet to be married. So I don't think it's specified in the opera, but he would be typically a late teenager.
And do you, does he have any other lines or any other function in the song?
He doesn't do terribly much more. He exists a little bit otherwise, but he mostly exists to come on and talk a little bit, be one of, it's a very, very large cast because it is an opéra lyrique, so huge chorus, etc. He doesn't have much of an internal life. He doesn't have much of an arc otherwise.
Is that how you're playing him? Somebody who doesn't have much of an internal arc? If you were to, if you were me and you were watching yourself play this, singing this as mm-hmm. you did, would you say the internal, would you say the character that just came through does not have much of an internal life, that
ideally not. Ideally he should feel very proud of himself.
I don't mean ideally. I mean as you just did it.
I can't know. What am I thinking about? I think I am being graceful and eloquent and poetic. I conceive of myself as a young but still sensitive young man. I am proud that I have learnt good sword fighting and such things. I'm mostly just extremely proud to be representing my lady. I am a little bit brash. I am very showy in a way that isn't so overtly aggressive, but instead I'm going to do it with a lot of flourish.
And what about all the smiling? You're smiling at the audience. Mm-hmm. What is that about?
I want them to like me. I want them to know that I'm here, that I'm, it's an audience piece. I am talking to an audience. I am trying to woo them and also trying to represent the queen. I am her I'm her emissary, so I represent kind of her goodwill as well. And I'm a safe emissary.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to just say a few things about, and you tell me what doesn't land. I'm just going to give you your word back. But let's say it's not about the page, and it's got something to do with the with either this opera or your relationship to music. That you are you're proud. You, not the page. As you come on, you're sensitive. You're good at sword fighting, but let's just say you got the technique, got the accoutrement of the work. Proud and brash, but also that you think of yourself as a representative of the queen. Not much of a role other than to be a representative of this person. And to play it safe.
Yes.
And let's say that person, the queen, is music. Does that land?
Yeah.
Absolutely. You're playing it safe as a musician? And
I think so, sometimes. I mean, I think it calcs very well to who I am in a lot of ways. I am assured. And relatively proud most of the time, but also I am not trying to be disliked. I am not, I am overtly, specifically trying to be liked most of the time, especially with this sort of opera aria, because this is exactly the kind of aria that I will do at the beginning of an audition or during a donor event or something. Just this, a very, hello, please love me, please give money to this, please hire me. Look how open I am. So I think it all, it tracks very, very well. I'm representing some sort of larger ideal. I am proud of it. And I am to a certain extent subsuming myself to it. I think this kind of calcs quite well to who I am.
You like this?
Do I like your description or do I like the fact that it calcs to me?
The fact.
Yes, actually.
Okay. Do you want to try anything else?
Anything else music-wise or a different piece or...
No, a different thing, different way of being.
Of being, yeah. Yeah, of course, why not? Do you want to give me something or shall I just try something?
Well, let's figure something out about the about this boy and do it a different way, you know. And we'll try to forget that this is about you and music. But I'll keep track. And let's say, so you're a 16-year-old boy. Is the queen pretty?
Yes.
Okay. What other sorts of what else might be going on between you and the queen? In your head, I'm not saying, I'm not, nothing on towards.
No, but I think it's entirely likely that we've got some sort of Carabino situation, maybe not overtly like a Carabino Contessa situation, but I probably have a crush on her. I think that is very likely. She's powerful. She's not old herself.
Right. She's probably actually in the same young nubile age as you. And in that case, how do you feel about standing in front of a bunch of people? How do you feel towards these lords? What do you think of them?
I think I am above them because I have the queen's ear.
This is how you feel towards the donors too?
Yeah, a little bit. Sure, why not? Okay. Because I have the ability of music. Ideally not, but yeah, sometimes.
No, I don't think we care about the ideal.
I care too much about the ideal, perhaps.
I think so. And I think this is you know, this is what we might be dealing with. So let's break it a little bit. So you actually don't like these.
Sure.
People. You're above them. You like the lady, kind of, you know, very naturally in love with her. You have no shot. And then they have sent you out to come in and say, this woman that you're in love with is going to take one of these douchebags or whatever they are, like one of these Wall Street bros, to basically. Do you know how to read and write as the page?
Yes.
Okay. So you know how to read and write. So you have also read some French poetry from that period, and you know some of the romances, etc. So this is like 1540s.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Can we do this now? And you know, if you can go back as you're doing this, keep in mind that that you are not a representative of the queen, but somebody who's being used.
Okay, sure. Noble Seigneur, salut. Noble Seigneur, salut. Seigneur,
sorry. Right now, as you were, and this is I have no way of describing it, as you were doing that long note that for which you had to strain.
Mm-hmm.
What were you going through as you were doing that?
Let me show you how strong I am. Let me show you how much I can do.
And how are you feeling as you were doing it with your voice? In terms of like what was going on in your mind, because you have this now, this different kind of character to play.
Having fun. Basically trying to tap into a different fun. The fun of my usual interpretation is more just, isn't it fun to share music together? Aren't these sort of very silly fioriturras just delightful to jump around in? But I hope you like them. This is still, I'm having fun with my sort of doodles, but I don't really care if you're listening. There's a bit more relishing, sort of selfish relishing.
Yeah. That's not what the boy we said is going through. That's more of you interfering, sort of the page as the function of the page.
You think so?
Well, I mean, let's go back through it again. The boy comes in, he's in love with the queen, who we know is music.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the moment where where he's really going to, it's probably one of the worst things he has ever done in his life.
Okay.
I don't imagine he's having fun telling people like.
Okay. I was taking it as he's having fun showing how superior it is. So you want a lot more pathos, basically, in his task.
I don't know if about pathos, but I like the. I mean, it makes sense. So superiority is something we discussed. He's going to be superior. We know that he's going to be superior. But fun, I think, is. Can we cut the fun out?
Yeah.
The fun, I can imagine him at some point like going into the fun. It's a tremendous defense mechanism.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
For the emissary to to withstand what is happening.
Mm-hmm.
But can we do it differently?
Yeah, sure.
Can you do it differently?
Yes.
How are you so happy? No, can you? Well, let's look at it differently. Say to me, no, I cannot do it, or like I have a problem with doing it, and let's see what that's about.
Yeah, I don't think I can. I think I can. That's a problem, though. I think I can. I think it's going to be difficult, though, because I'm used to enjoying those. I'm used to sort of enjoying the feeling in the voice, the freedom. Shall I try it again? Or would you like to?
So you're going to lose something of your freedom as this is happening.
I might. There's freedom in many emotions. Freedom does not have to come with enjoyment, especially when it's a vocalism. There's a great amount of freedom in a weep, for instance. So I could still have, especially technically, of course, I do want to have freedom, just vocally, but it doesn't have to be a relish of how delightful vocalism can be. It could be a repetition, it can be a plea, it can be a cry. I think I'm going to try one of those instead.
Let's see what comes up. Great. Okay.
Noticing you, sorry. Noticing you, sorry.
Tell me what was going on.
Mm-hmm. I'm taking it very literally in a lot of ways. The text, every praise that I have of this woman that I love is not just a sales pitch. It is a little bit of a dagger because she's so wonderful. Any one of you would be so lucky to have her. You don't even realize how wonderful she is. So there's a sort of disdain of all of these people. And at the same time, a lot of sweetness for just even the poetry of the words. There is now a relishing, but it's a relishing of sadness, of not the overt, but instead that kings would be jealous of, that I'm jealous of. It's you know, it's the description of the lost lover.
And how did you feel, or what were the mental sort of thoughts that were going through your head, meta?
Mm-hmm.
Meta to this, meaning about yourself in that position doing that.
Basically, to strip what I know of my previous decisions of the character, and just to take it for face value on the page.
How do you feel about that?
It's fun. Also, basically, it's a wonderful kind of perversion. And I play a lot of young men as a mezzo, as a tall mezzo. I play a lot of young men who are on some sort of spectrum of very, very chipper to not so chipper. But at the same time, all of them have some sort of darkness at the same, because they are always representing somebody that they can't have, or they have a crush on somebody who's going to end up with the tenor, and they usually get killed, maybe even tortured. So to remove the artifice of what is normal, what is expected of court, what is the youth even, and just take what's on the page as what's on the page. So noble seigneur salut, sure, that can be happy or sad. It could just be, you know, hello, I salute you. It doesn't have to be hello, welcome to my show. And then after that, une dame noble et sage, there's nothing inherently about that text that means that I have to be a court jester, a lovely court jester. That could be a tragic romance.
Are you giving me the ideal? In terms of when I said, how did you feel? You said it can also be good. But the part about the loss of what you came in with,
mm-hmm.
the loss of like this decisions that you have come in with and what you're used to, that I didn't hear. Was there no loss at all?
Oh, you mean, is there a sort of mourning of what I've lost?
I have no idea. We can get to it a different way. Who am I reminding you of in your sort of life in music? Is it the
most typically a repetiteur?
What is the repetiteur's job?
To make somebody rehearse. So a coach or a repetiteur, because you're focusing more on text than technique. But honestly, it could be anybody. What I'm essentially reminded of is when you come to somebody with, you know, sort of a very packaged thing. Incidentally, this happens, you're working more on text and interpretation, but it could be the drama coach. It could honestly be the new voice teacher you've never worked for. We just have to pretend that all of it, you're talking about tone, color, or something. It doesn't really, really matter. But what I'm reminded of in this situation is very, very much, this is what I've been working on. This is how I think of something. And then somebody telling me, you haven't got it. You didn't, you don't actually understand this character, or you don't know how to approach high notes or low notes. It does, again, it doesn't really, really matter. But yeah, that's the situation I'm reminded of.
Who's the scariest person in your field who can tell you that? Not, I don't mean as a specific individual, as a role.
Mm-hmm. Probably a conductor. Well, no, it could really be anybody. At this stage, because I'm not looking for a teacher, it could very much be a teacher, but I have a teacher that I really like. However, if you're trying to kind of audition for a teacher, that can be a really, really fraught moment of, please think that I'm good enough that you can work with me, but also have the right kind of problems that you want to fix.
Is that what's happening between us? Is that the power relations that's happening between us?
Not really. You said that I'm not, or I think if I understand you correctly, that I'm not, that I don't seem to have a loss of my interpretation. And because I really don't mind. I don't think I will forevermore sing this as a tragic lament, but first of all, I lose nothing in doing it. And second of all, I might actually like bringing more of that into it, just even secretly. I'm thinking of tone color. So I'm not afraid of you that much, actually, I think.
I don't feel that I'm causing fear.
Mm-hmm.
I'm feeling, and as you were singing, I felt like I was causing compliance.
Yes.
I was reminded very much of sort of those donors who, and what they expect of you, which is what they expect of you is probably to be cheery and,
mm-hmm.
you know, or whatever it was. And in this case, they had just one of the donors had opened his mouth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Compliance is absolutely the thing. And in that case, you're rather than being like a donor, you're much more like a director, because the anybody, a coach, a director, a voice teacher, the assumption is come really prepared. So the difference between coming to the first day of an opera rehearsal and the first day of a stage of a play, excuse me, is that usually you come not knowing the material for a play and you do readings together and you sort of build something. There's no time for that. So you're expected to come to the first day of rehearsals having already memorized everything, having already coached everything, and you coach every note to within an inch of its life. It's so prescribed. However, you're also, with the compliance, you're also expected to have the egolessness to say, oh, all of a sudden, you think that Urbain is actually a 97-year-old woman who actually raised Marguerite? Okay, well, I have to try it. Why not?
Okay, then let's do it differently, because I don't think we're gonna get at this through either compliance or, because we're trying to see how you would do this, how you would do it. If you were to do it again, the way you wanted to do it, not the way the donors expected, not the way the tradition expects it, not the way.
I'm practicing it by myself. I'm enjoying the music, perhaps.
Performing it. I don't know what gets to you. I don't know what it does. What does it for you? I mean, you're going to enjoyment, but it seemed like that time, the first time, you went to enjoyment as a way of a little bit distancing it. So can we, where are you, Timmy? Are you on camera? Can you spotlight David Dixon and yourself as well? You do it or I'll do it for you.
Yeah, you can do it.
Okay, thank you. Can you spotlight yourselves, or I can do it here. Oh, there you go, add a spotlight. Okay, so here's sort of like the, not the gallery of the directors, but the gallery of the sort of like of these, of however it is that this page feels towards the the Lord's and however it is that Sophie feels towards the donors.
Mm-hmm.
And the directors who think that so-and-so is a 90-year-old woman, and they think that they are right, etc.
Mm-hmm.
But you are an emissary of, you're an emissary of the queen. You're an emissary of the queen with whom you are in love.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it's music. And the, and please, I know this is counterfactual, is that I'm commanding you to do this, but the only command is stop yourself when you feel like you're not happy.
Mm-hmm.
And pause and take as much time as you want and go back to the beginning. And I won't say anything for the rest of the 5 minutes or 7 minutes that we have together in this. Just remember, we are those damn lords. Like, we are.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to. You don't. You might have to make us like you, but you do not have to internalize us.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see how that goes.
And I am myself predominantly, right? I am doing what I want to do.
You're performing this in a manner that will work for you. In a manner that will represent your relationship as. All I can say is that you're an emissary of the, you're an emissary of the queen. That's all I know. I have nothing else to, because I don't know how this should be done. So all I can say is what you told me. Mm-hmm. You're an emissary of the queen and you are superior to these guys to whom you're presenting your queen.
Yes, let's see if I can.
Yeah, stop yourself. Whenever it does, whenever you go in, if it doesn't work, stop yourself and come. Go from.
You want, shall I go from the beginning?
From anywhere you want, but if you stop yourself, go back to where you started and give yourself time. To do.
Can I mute myself?
Yeah, mute yourself.
I'm fine with it. Noticing you. Noble Seigneur, sorry, Seigneur,
clear that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't want to say anything else, Iman or Sophie, before we switch over?
What are we switching over to?
Great question.
Well, I think it's maybe actually how this just ended with Sophie. Maybe a segue into something. I have a lot of things that I'd love to ask the both of you. Mm-hmm. But I'll keep mine as brief as I can, so I can also open it up for others. And also just sort of flatten this grid of the four of us to everybody else that's here. But I guess maybe starting with, I wanted to hear a little bit about what that felt like beyond what I felt in watching what that seemed to feel like. Mm-hmm. But Sophie, I know that we've spoken a little bit about, in the context of opera, what a setup like this would be, you know, far from, but also closely emblematic of like the idea of a masterclass and how that is a part of that world and how it functions as a part of that world. And I really, the only moment I really thought about it was just in the fact that we just ended with you performing. Mm-hmm. And at least from the ones that I've seen, I feel like that's, you know, there's like the celebration at the end of like, success.
Yeah, and we had talked about that, the sort of artificiality of the masterclass, where you do a version, and that's sort of what I was talking about before when you asked me, Iman, about the role that you represent in a lot of ways in my approach to this, to you. There is very much the typical three-part structure of the masterclass. Young, ideally gifted singer performs, does a good job, but not good enough to be perfect. Master teacher brings up completely new mind-blowing things. Young singer fixes something technical, interpretive, and then all of a sudden shines in a new facet is broken forth for herself as well as for the audience, who gets to see both the brilliance of the singer, who is able to pick up something very quickly, the ingenuity of the singer, and of course the great skill of the master teacher. There's sort of always this tripartite structure.
In a way, it's a place for the teacher to show, who's also a trained singer, to show their aesthetic through their teaching.
Yes, that's true.
But there's also maybe just for Uman's sake also and others, I wonder if you could describe, because in opera, there's a very particular relationship to these two terms, voice teacher and coach. Which have very, I mean, from what I understand it, where Uman ended up was kind of maybe a little bit more similar to what the coach might.
I think so. And it's a very blurry distinction. Typically, there seems to be more of an adherence, a sort of sycophantic adherence sometimes to your teacher. Your teacher is your priest. In a lot of ways, is your the person who is leading you down this path of righteousness, and in the worst of sort of compromised situations, this sort of parental figure in a way that can be very, very toxic. Whereas a coach is more, well, a little bit outside of you. There is an expectation that you're going to have one teacher at any given time and maybe for your entire life, and you represent their work. You are really their child in a lot of ways because you are continuing a certain legacy. We talk about the teachers of our teachers. Oh, I'm working with such and such, and you know, they were trained by such and such. So there's a descendance of skill. There is the passing on of a specific kind of approach to singing. Whereas the coach does tend to do things that are more interpretive as opposed to the instrument. And there's more freedom by virtue of that and also more independence. Again, plenty of coaches also end up having a very, very strict, this must be done how I want it to be done. But there's a lot more, especially with a good coach, a very intelligent coach, they might know that, okay, you need to do this slower, you're really too loud here, this is just not how it's done, it hasn't been done like this since 1790, but they will have a discussion with you. There's a lot less hegemony in the process of working with coaches. And again, assuming good coaches.
So in that way, Uman kind of took on this role of, I mean, I was sort of surprised that Uman found this place of trying to find almost a place of shared empathy between the two of you at the beginning of saying, okay, here's this, like, what's the story behind this? What's this, like, because maybe it sort of, he sort of gravitated to the content. So it sounds like that would be, in some ways, more a kind of coach.
Very often, yes.
How did that, okay, go ahead, Sophie.
Because a teacher will probably also talk about this, but there's so many things to talk about on a technical level. And again, it depends how prepared you are, how competent you are, because maybe with a teacher, you're not dealing at all with character because you're literally trying to make sure you don't break on the high C. Mm-hmm. Or you're just trying to clean up so that ba-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and you're just doing this for 45 minutes. So what you can focus on, the aspect of interpretation or of communication, you could either go from a more virtual or a more textual, a more actual, a more physical, etc.
But then, so you brought up a word, competence. In knowing, maybe this would be kind of a way of moving a little bit forward. How does it feel, or how did it feel for you to be in a scenario where you knew the person that was teaching or coaching or whatever, not even knowing what those roles exactly are, except for this sort of vague teaching idea, mm-hmm. was incompetent to to the material that you're working with, both on a technical level and maybe also on a coaching level, in a certain sense, in terms of knowing the repertoire, knowing even who Cherubino is, or
damn it. I'm making these assumptions. Just yet another young boy, you know, he's younger, and he impregnates his lady, so. Actually, differently scary, because you don't have that common language, because you cannot expect to elide those things that don't need to be spoken anymore, because there is not, yes, well, you need to make sure that you are lengthening that, because then it's going to really show off the bloom of your voice. The entire purpose of this aria is to get hired because you can show off the fact that you can go high, or the fact that you have a nice lyrical voice. Or again, the same thing for the opera itself. just not being able to, rely on this common assumption of this is the basic movement of a page boy. So it's actually quite terrifying to sing for people who aren't in a certain world because they're ruthless. They can't help but be. One of the best things that I had to do was to sing for children, one of the hardest mezzo-soprano Rossini arias over and over on early mornings, because they do not care that it's really, really hard and goes really, really high and goes really, really fast. And they don't care about anything other than, do I understand that you are grateful and happy? Am I interested in you? They're not going to be interested because, ooh, she did such an interesting little bit of coloratura there. So especially if there is any sort of character, any sort of word of interpretation and of meaning, it can be really, really daunting to sing for perceptive people who don't know that they're supposed to perceive specific cliches.
Mm. Or even knowing the way that they should, yeah, the way that they, the context in which to perceive your singing. I mean, for me, and I want to pass it over to Iman. For me, there were these moments, especially at the end when Iman put up both mine and his video, where I doubt that you realized this, Sophie, but on the audio, I think probably for everybody, there's this sort of cracking, readjustment that Zoom does when somebody goes very, very loud. It like makes it sound like you're very far away. And it sort of put you in a room alone in a really beautiful way, I think, to me. But it made me think a little bit more about what presumptions of trust you need for somebody to teach you. Like, how does your, if you're not in the same space, you're in different rooms, like, what's the difference of performing when you trust the person that's teaching you versus not even being able to know the purposiveness of why you're being taught in the first place? If you want to respond to that, that's great. But or Iman, if you want to say a little bit about how you felt doing this and trying to find your own way.
I think I will know ultimately how I felt if I ask I have to ask a question because that last part was the, when you were pausing for like a long period. Now I have to tell you that if you were going to the beginning, I would not the very, very beginning, but if you were repeating a phrase, I would not be able to, my musical memory would not allow me to understand that this has been repeated. What was happening when you were paused in those pauses?
I was pausing because I didn't know what I'd done. Because I had not been either thinking or not thinking. I had been in that in between where you're just self-conscious. Sometimes I was overtly thinking, I was thinking of something, I was trying something, and then sometimes I wasn't at all. I was simply existing in music. And I was stopping when I was in the cracks of neither having a particular, not to get too dualistic, but not either an opinion or an embodiment. When I was sort of rap-la-pla in between. And yeah, when I was confused, especially because I was grappling throughout with trying to figure out what the prompt meant.